Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke.
Glory to you, Lord.
Jesus told his disciples a parable. Can a blind person guide a blind person? Will not both fall into a pit? No disciple is superior to the teacher, but when fully trained, every disciple will be like his teacher. Why do you notice the splinter in your brother's eye, but do not perceive the wooden beam in your own? How can you say to your brother, "Brother, let me remove that splinter in your eye," when you do not even notice the wooden beam in your own eye? You hypocrite, remove the wooden beam from your eye first. Then you will see clearly to remove the splinter in your brother's eye. A good tree does not bear rotten fruit, nor does a rotten tree bear good fruit. For every tree is known by its own fruit. For people do not pick figs from thorn bushes, nor do they gather grapes from brambles. A good person out of the store of goodness in his heart produces good, but an evil person out of evil produces evil. For from the fullness of the heart, the mouth speaks. The Gospel of the Lord. An occupational hazard of the priesthood is the fundraising gala or banquet. As I have been a pastor of rather small parishes, I have been rarely so honored. But friends feel the need to invite me as a guest, and sometimes I can't escape. So I have found a way to make it bearable, which I will now share with you. Imagine that one of the honorees is St. Francis of Assisi. Amid those dressed in their finery, seriously networking, he would be in his rough habit chatting with the busboys. If he were given any tickets, he would no doubt have invited the poorest people that he knew with instructions to bring back any unused food. It would be as good as a Marx Brothers comedy. But the point is serious and reflects not only this week's gospel, but also the basic meaning of St. Luke. Luke warns those who we tend to bless. Indeed, the honorees at most galas are the rich and the well-filled, to whom Luke issues his woes. This is historically true. Our second readings this year have been from 1 Corinthians. Paul loved the Corinthians, but they can be overly impressed with worldly success. "When you meet in one place, then it is not to eat the Lord's Supper. For in eating, each one goes ahead with his own supper, and one goes hungry while the other gets drunk." This would not have seemed to be strange. When there was a meal, even in a religious context, people would divide themselves by class and wealth, and those with the more impressive credentials would eat together with the best food and wine. St. James reports the same situation. "For if a man with gold rings on his fingers and in fine clothes comes into your assembly, and a poor person in shabby clothes also comes in, and you pay attention to the one wearing the fine clothes and say, 'Sit here, please,' while you say to the poor one, 'Stand there,' or 'Sit at my feet,' have you not made distinctions among yourselves and become judges with evil designs?" When we hear the parable of the blind leading the blind, we must remember that what he is telling us for the last few weeks and will reinforce into sections of this gospel that are uniquely his. Riches, fame, and good opinion can make us blind. We do not know if the rich man treated Lazarus badly. We know, however, that he did not see him as fully a human being. The good Jews who passed by the man robbed and cast aside on the road did not see a fellow human in need, but an inconvenience. Here he is addressing those in his community who would wish to be teachers and leaders. They need to see ahead of them, and for Luke, that means thinking and acting beyond the now, the immediate. Now, I shall once more break the rule about homilies becoming book reports. Doris Kearns Goodwin's new book, Leadership in Turbulent Times, examines the lives of Lincoln, the two Roosevelts, and Lyndon Johnson. She notes that each of them had a crisis which forced them to evaluate their lives and purpose. Now, for me, the most interesting was Johnson, particularly since I spent a good deal of my youth picketing things he was doing. He was the youngest master of the Senate ever, and he had uncanny political instincts and used his skills with consummate ability. To get there, however, he had to virtually deny his political heritage as a New Dealer. As Texas was becoming more conservative, those beliefs were getting him in trouble. Now, at the time of his greatest mastery, he had a heart attack, which almost killed him. And he asked himself, if he died, would he be remembered for anything? He was devastated at the answer and returned to Washington with the firm purpose to revive the policies of the New Deal. Now we have the Voting Rights Act, civil rights legislation, and the Great Society because of this. He put aside his immediate concern for a vision and removed the plank from his own eye. He was still the wiliest cat in the Senate, but he was motivated by more than political expediency. Like all of the presidents Goodwin discussed, it was catastrophe producing a crisis which allowed Johnson to escape the grip of the immediate, the tyranny of the now. Succeeding too early and too easily can cause a spiritual myopia that blurs reality beyond our direct experience. If everything is going well, why go beyond? To be forced to stop is an invitation to see and to discover one's real values. This is always painful, and is perhaps why Luke uses such extreme language. He needs to get our attention. I have not finished the book, so I do not know what her conclusions will be, but I have made mine. With all these men, vision was ultimately not a what, not a program, not a plan, not a strategy, but a whom. They saw more people as fully human. For Johnson, it was the memory of the poor people he taught in the backcountry. For FDR, those he met in rehab. This is Luke's insight as well. The rich man did not see Lazarus as a person and was damned. The Samaritan saw the man who fell in with thieves not as an enemy, but as a human being, and is praised. If this is true for politicians, how much more so should it be for us Christians? Who do we not see? Do we see the unborn child as someone who needs our support and understanding, or as an inconvenience best and, quite frankly, usually forgotten? We may not personally know anyone with such bad health care that he or she cannot afford life-giving drugs such as insulin, but we know they're out there. And do we remember them when we vote or when we choose on what charities to support? Or are they completely invisible to us? Lent begins on Wednesday. It is an important season, and we try to perform Lenten practices. Some people add things on their day. Others give things up. But why do either? What do you hope to obtain from Lent? If you were planning a project at work and did not state the objective, would anyone listen to you? In fact, would you have a job the next week? It should be the same, even more so because it is more important with our spiritual lives. What do we want, and where do we hope to be at the end of Lent? I have a personal plan. I say this every year, and sometimes I don't quite do that well. But in the spirit of St. Luke, by the end of Lent, I want to see the same number of people in a room as Jesus does.